with others because that would just exacerbate their shame. Assad talked about the first night there being chained, hooded, naked in a freezing isolation cell, crying out for help. And having to urinate on himself because they deliberately would not come to him. Suhail, who is a middle school principal, talked about his forced nudity and the indignity. He said, I am a principal. I am a man. And to suffer that level of degradation was really, really painful for them. And just enormous credit to their courage to come to a United States court and speak about it.
Bahar Azmi, legal director for the Center for Constitutional Rights, representing three Abu Ghraib plaintiffs in their lawsuit against the U.S. military contractor CACI, also known as CACI. To see the full interview, go to democracynow.org. That does it for our show, our video and audio podcasts. You can get them wherever you get your podcasts. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Sharifa Bokadous, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff, Charina Nadura, Sam Alcock, Tay Maria Astudio, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, and Hannah Elias. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Portland on 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO by becoming a member during our spring membership drive. It's taking place now through May 25th. Your contribution goes toward postmodern avant-garde alternative radio. Donate now by heading over to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, the Portland Public School Board votes to allow JROTC back in schools.
Candidates for the Democratic nomination for Oregon's 3rd Congressional District call out Maxine Dexter for accepting dark money.
And in international news, President Biden pauses a shipment of bombs to Israel over concerns about their attack on Rafah.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Reed Johnson. Portland Public Schools will now have the option to introduce Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps, or JROTC, programs. The school board voted 4-3 on Tuesday night to approve the decision. The district won't mandate high schools to offer the JROTC. Instead, high school principals are given the option as an added career technical education offering. At a pre-meeting rally, community members spoke out against the proposal. Haven is a PPS substitute teacher and a member of People Organizing for Philippine Solidarity. She spoke to the crowd about the risk of reintroducing military recruitment in Portland.
The military preys on the most poor and oppressed students. It makes promises of a better future in exchange for fighting against our siblings overseas to defend the profits of the imperialists. From Vietnam to Korea to Iraq to the Philippines to Palestine, even here, it is clear that the U.S. military does not serve the people it enlists. It is ramping up its military tensions with other imperialists all over the world, and it needs more recruits. But it's failing. And as it fails, they are turning to recruit in our high schools. They're turning to recruit the youth. It is a direct recruitment strategy for the armed forces. They depend on their congressionally mandated access to schools. They say it isn't a recruiting strategy, but 40% of cadets who spend 3 years in the program enlist after graduation. In contrast, less than 1% of people ages 18 to 25 join the military.
That was Haven, a PPS substitute teacher. This decision will make PPS the sixth school district in Oregon to currently offer JROTC. Salem-Keizer, Madras, Reynolds, Lebanon, and Oregon City also allow the program in their schools. Portland banned military recruitment 30 years ago over the U.S. military's anti-gay discriminatory Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Prospective JROTC programs in Portland will first need approval by the district superintendent before they can begin. If approved, all JROTC programs are governed exclusively by the Pentagon.
The Portland Metro Chamber presses the city to abandon its plans to improve and add bike lanes to Southwest 4th Avenue. The Metro Chamber, formerly known as the Portland Business Alliance, wrote a letter to Mayor Ted Wheeler, City Commissioner Mingus Maps, and the head of the Portland Bureau of Transportation, Millicent Williams, at the end of April. In that letter, they call for the city to abandon its nearly $17 million project to upgrade Southwest 4th, a project the Metro Chamber calls wasteful, especially in regards to the bike lanes. The project began in April, and it's slated to be finished by the end of 2025. The street will be reconstructed and repaved between Lincoln and Burnside. PBOT plans to upgrade ADA curb ramps, make safer crossings, add street lighting, give buses their own lane, and build a new protected bikeway. Currently, 4th doesn't have any devoted bike lanes, so riders mix in with traffic. The Metro Chamber says Portland has enough bike lanes on Southwest Broadway and NATO, and that people don't want to commute downtown by bike anymore. The construction of the bike lane represents a little less than 5% of the whole cost of the project. Commissioner Maps has defended the work, saying the construction will continue. The Downtown Neighborhood Association also wrote a letter declaring their support, saying, quote, "It is true that the circumstances of downtown have changed in the post-pandemic world, and as such, we feel that infrastructure improvements are more important than ever to enhancing the livability of downtown, which is in turn key to Portland's revitalization," end quote. The project is scheduled to be finished by December 2025.
Earlier this week, The Intercept broke the story that Maxine Dexter, a candidate for Oregon's 3rd Congressional District, was receiving dark money support tied to the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC. Their $1.6 million in spending comes through the group 314 Action Fund, and The Intercept reports that it's meant to counter candidate Sushila Jayapal, a former Multnomah County commissioner. Jayapal has called for a ceasefire in Gaza, as has her sister, Washington Representative Pramila Jayapal. Jayapal and primary candidate Eddie Morales released a statement expressing their dismay about the dark money influence on their race. Morales and Jayapal are not the only ones calling for more transparency and accountability. Democratic primary candidates Michael Jonas, Ricky Barajas, Rachel Lydia Rand, and Nolan Bailenga held a press conference yesterday. In their statements, they called for a campaign finance overhaul to, quote, level the playing field. They write, quote, "All political groups influencing elections should disclose their donors in real time, so voters have a clear understanding of who is funding the message they see," end quote. 314 Action Fund began its spending to Dexter on April 1st, meaning they won't have to publish who their donors are until May 20th, the day before the primary election. The candidates continue, quote, "Our campaigns are powered by the people, not by big corporations or special interests. We encourage every voter to research all of the candidates in this race," meaning maintain a healthy dose of skepticism and question any power structures or candidates implying that there are only three viable options, end quote. Oregon's Democratic and Republican primaries will be on May 21st. Voters must mail in or return their ballots to a drop box by 8 p.m. that day.
Former House Speaker Paul Ryan weighs in on the 2024 presidential election. President Biden condemns anti-Semitism, and the House calls for more college and university presidents to testify on handling pro-Palestine protests. With more on these stories, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Trump can't win, but Biden can lose, meaning Trump's polling at his peak pretty much in all the swing states. He's basically polling at the best he has, at the best he can get, and Biden's underperforming everywhere.
Republican former Speaker of the House Paul Ryan says he expects the presidential race to be close. Ryan is criticizing his party as Trump-oriented and chaotic, noting that intra-party fights helped push him out of Congress. The polls do show a tight race. Former President Donald Trump was stuck in a New York court yesterday while the porn star he is accused of paying off gave a detailed account of the sex Trump denies took place. Meanwhile, federal Judge Eileen Cannon is indefinitely delaying Trump's separate document trial. It was set to begin later this month, but Cannon cited the complex legal rules around using classified evidence. But President Joe Biden faces a different challenge, trying to strike a balance on the war in Gaza. Yesterday, he condemned the rise in anti-Semitism during Israel's war against Hamas. Speaking at a Holocaust remembrance event on Capitol Hill, he said the ancient hatred of Jews didn't end after World War II.
This hatred continues to lie deep in the hearts of too many people in the world and requires our continued vigilance and outspokenness.
Negotiators from Israel have returned to the Cairo ceasefire negotiations, but tanks have also closed the Rafah border. The sticking point seems to be the length of a pause in fighting. Meanwhile, North Carolina Republican Representative Virginia Fox says presidents of Yale, UCLA, and University of Michigan will be called to testify before Congress about their handling of anti-Semitism and pro-Palestine protests.
Congress will not tolerate your dereliction of duty to your Jewish students. American universities are officially put on notice that we have come to take our universities back.
But students may not be the issue. The New York police say more than half of the 170 arrested at a City College protest weren't enrolled at the school. A third of those arrested at Columbia weren't either. Kalaya Ann Mendoza with anti-war group Nonviolent Peace Force faults administrators for bringing in the cops.
School administrators should be meeting with students and should not escalate to this point. These students are unarmed. They are engaged in practicing peaceful, nonviolent protest, which is a fundamental human right.
A proposed New York State Equal Rights Amendment won't be on the ballot this November after a judge ruled that lawmakers missed a procedural step. The legislature didn't get a legal opinion from the Attorney General on the measure to protect trans and reproductive rights. Supporters argue that step has been missed in past proposals. South Dakota's primary next month will be the first national election since ballot drop boxes were banned there. It's one of 12 states to ban drop boxes, though there's no proven connection between drop boxes and voter fraud or stolen ballots. Member of the Rosebud Sioux and State Senator Sean Bordeaux says the ban's unfair to rural and tribal voters.
It was something that a lot of people utilized on our reservation communities where you might have to travel 70 miles to go vote.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
President Biden paused an arms shipment to Israel last week and only confirmed the pause yesterday. This is the first time since the October 7th Hamas-led attack that the president has used his power to curtail arms as an instrument to influence Israel in its war on Gaza. U.S. officials said this might not be the only curtailment of weapons shipments if Israel escalates its assault on Rafah. Biden withheld some 3,500 bombs that he feared could be dropped on that city. On Tuesday, Israeli tanks entered Rafah, where over a million Gazans have taken refuge, and the Israeli military took control of the border crossing with Egypt. The military operation has halted the flow of aid from Egypt into Gaza, worsening the extreme hunger and lack of supplies in the besieged territory. The Kuwait hospital in Rafah has received 27 bodies and 150 wounded people since Israeli tanks entered the city. Dr. Suhaib Hems is the head of the hospital. Dr. Hems said, quote, "The situation is catastrophic in every sense of the word." U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin testified at a Senate Appropriations Committee meeting today. He says that a major Israeli operation in Rafah could change the U.S. calculus on security assistance to Israel.
Stormy Daniels testified yesterday in Donald Trump's trial concerning hush money payments he made to her. Daniels described how back in Reno in 2006, she went to Trump's hotel suite in Lake Tahoe, expecting that they would go out to dinner. When she came out of the bathroom after getting a drink of water, she saw Trump sitting on the bed in his underwear. The testimony got graphic and intimate after that, causing Justice Merchant to warn Daniels. It also caused one of Trump's lawyers to ask for a mistrial, which Merchant refused. The trial has today off, and Ms. Daniels' testimony will continue tomorrow.
You are listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $60,000 by May 25th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden about his newest article, Sweeping Decision, Grants Pass v. Johnson. At 6, it's Wings, and then at 7, Eco Justice Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 39 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, sunny and warm, with a high of a whopping 81 degrees. Today in history, in 1980, the World Health Organization confirms the eradication of smallpox. And the quote of the day is from American writer Thomas Pynchon, born this day in 1937. He said, quote, "If they can get you asking the wrong questions, they don't have to worry about answers."
The Chickasaw Nation is responding to the deadly storms that hit Oklahoma at the end of April. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Chickasaw Nation is pooling resources to aid the cities of Sulphur and Marietta, Oklahoma, in the aftermath of a recent fatal storm system that ravaged both communities. First responders and Chickasaw Nation Light Horse Police have been on site assisting with search and rescue efforts, assessing damage, and aiding in unsafe areas. In a statement, Chickasaw Nation Governor Bill Anitubby said their hearts go out to all the individuals and families affected by this tragic and destructive storm. He added they're actively collaborating with local authorities and emergency management agencies in relief efforts and will be there to assist our employees, neighbors, and friends. The storm system caused 4 fatalities in Oklahoma in late April, 2 being in the Chickasaw Nation. Hundreds of people who were also injured throughout the state and hundreds of homes and businesses were damaged. As high school and college students plan for their graduations, some Native students could face resistance for wanting to wear tribal regalia with their caps and gowns. The Mountain West Newsboro's Caleb Radel has more.
For Native communities, an eagle feather is a symbol of wisdom and strength, and given in times of great honor, like a graduation. But every spring, the Native American Rights Fund hears from students who were not allowed to wear an eagle feather or other tribal regalia. Morgan Saunders is an attorney with a Colorado-based law group. She says parents often break down in tears when they discuss their child being denied their tribal identity.
For many families, the wearing of the eagle feather is more important than the diploma because it's something that's given at this important time in their child's life. They're transitioning, you know, often into adulthood.
More than a dozen states have laws to protect a Native student's right to wear tribal regalia, including Nevada, Colorado, and Utah. Saunders says families in states without those protections should review their school district's policies and request dress code accommodations as early as possible. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
On Monday, Speaker Robert Rivas called upon Assemblymember James C. Ramos to deliver the first land acknowledgement to recognize area tribes on those lands the state capitol stands prior to opening of the Assembly floor session of the California session. Ramos says he was moved by the speaker's request to perform a land acknowledgement. He says tribes have always populated this state and had no boundaries and resided on their long-held homelands until Europeans and settlers immigrated to what is now known as California. He goes on to acknowledge the first healing between the state and tribes. Assemblymember James C. Ramos proudly represents the 45th Assembly District. He is the first and only California Native American serving in the state's legislature. I'm Jill Freitas.
This is Teacher Appreciation Week, a time to highlight the important role teachers play in shaping the lives of children. As Freda Ross reports from Austin, members of the Texas PTA say it's also time to advocate for increased pay and better working conditions for educators.
The
The first week of May is designated as Teacher Appreciation Week in the United States. The push to honor teachers started in 1953 when First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt persuaded Congress that there needed to be a specific day to recognize educators for their hard work. Students and parents often give teachers small gifts this week, and many retailers are offering special deals and discounts to educators. President of the Texas PTA, Jennifer Easley, says the best way to honor teachers is to stand up for their rights.
I think the biggest thing we can do to show them appreciation is to be advocating for them year-round, not only for public school funding so that teachers and staff can get the compensation that they deserve, but also to make sure that they are getting the two-way respectful communication that they are craving and deserve.
Easley says improving working conditions for teachers will also encourage more young people to enter the profession and keep more seasoned educators in the classroom. The Texas PTA was formed in 1970 when the Texas Congress of Mothers and the Texas Congress of Colored Parents and Teachers combined efforts to improve the state's education system. It's the second largest PTA in the nation with more than 2,000 chapters across the state. Easley says throughout the year, the organization's mission has remained the same, to improve the lives of teachers, students, and families.
And they're able to facilitate conversations on their campuses with their parents. And then as far as engagement goes, I mean, our PTAs are there to try to provide opportunities to bring parents to the table.
She says you don't have to be a parent or have a child enrolled in school to join a local PTA chapter. Membership is open to anyone who cares about young people and their futures. I'm Frieda Ross, Texas News Service.
Buying a used car can be a risky proposition, but a new consumer guide could help people avoid common pitfalls. The nonprofit Oregon Consumer Justice just released the first edition of its free resource called the Consumer Confidence Comics. The unique guide doubles as an interactive comic book with coloring pages. Michelle Ludke with the Oregon Consumer Justice says it's a fun way to learn how to ask the right questions.
When you get promises from a dealer, where do you capture those to make sure that they'll be part of your final contract? We have a checklist of different questions to ask at a dealer about purchasing a used car. You can also download that as a resource on our website.
The guide is available in English and Spanish. Used car prices shot up during the pandemic, but have come down a bit in the last year, with the average used car selling for about $31,000, according to iccars.com. Ludke also recommends taking the time to read the fine print on any contracts. The guide goes through the process from start to finish.
Whether or not you should be looking for financing beforehand, or what dealer financing looks like, what are scams that are common around purchasing a vehicle, and then also what to do if things go wrong.
In Oregon, used car dealers have 14 days to finalize the financing, so you could drive it off the lot and then have to return it if the loan falls through. So consumers are advised not to make any changes to the car until they get a welcome letter from their lender.
The state of Washington is proposing to downgrade gray wolves from endangered to sensitive status as a species. At last count, there were 260 gray wolves in Washington, a population that's steadily grown at an average rate of 23% since 2008, this according to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Colin Reynolds, with Defenders of Wildlife, contends changing the gray wolf status could jeopardize the progress. He says in the western two-thirds of the state, gray wolves are protected under the Federal Endangered Species Act, but in the eastern third, there are no federal protections and wolves are managed by the state.
Right now in the eastern third of Washington, there are penalties for the illegal killing of gray wolves. And there's also penalties ascribed to that. If the classification goes to from endangered to sensitive, as the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife would like, those penalties are a little bit less in a number of circumstances.
Reynolds says the gray wolf recovery efforts are guided by the state's Wolf Conservation and Management Plan, adopted in 2011. Since then, wolves have met recovery standards in certain parts of the state, but not all. So he says it's no time to change the rules. The state argues that reclassification is warranted, as gray wolves have seen 15 years of consecutive population growth. Data models project this is likely to continue, and that there are enough state-level protections already in place to keep the population sustainable. Reynolds disagrees.
we totally recognize and celebrate the population has grown, but a population growth isn't the same as the recovery standards in the Wolf Plan. We haven't met that geographical distribution.
Reynolds also notes recent instances of gray wolf killings across the West. The deaths of three gray wolves in Oregon prompted the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to issue a $50,000 reward for information on that case.
Electric vehicles are becoming more and more popular. Over the lifetime of the car, an electric vehicle, or EV, produces much less climate-warming pollution than a similar gas-powered car. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. A vehicle's impact on the climate begins even before it's on the road.
Whether we're talking about an electric vehicle or a conventional vehicle, you have to build the vehicle.
Jared Kelly of Argonne National Laboratory studies the climate warming emissions created over a vehicle's entire lifetime. He says manufacturing an EV typically produces a little more carbon pollution than manufacturing a gas-powered vehicle because of the energy needed to make EV batteries. But his research shows that switching to an EV is still better for the climate. On average, driving an EV creates so much less carbon pollution than a comparable gas-powered car that within 20,000 miles, it will have more than offset the extra carbon pollution created when it was built.
Usually by the second year of typical operation, you'd definitely be in the point of benefit.
The exact break-even point depends on the vehicle model and where you drive. You'll reach that break-even point faster in places where the electric grid uses more clean energy. But even in areas where a lot of electricity comes from coal, EVs still generate less carbon pollution over their lifetime than gas-powered cars. So although it takes a little more energy to make EVs, they're still better for the climate. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
It's Wednesday, and that means a visit from KBOO News poet Dan Raphael, who wonders if it's new or deja vu.
My birthday yesterday, start of a new year for me, but what's actually new? Technology gets faster and more widespread, but what's being said? More amusing ways to incentivize our isolation. The rich get rich and the poor get poorer, Peggy Lee sang in 1921. You don't believe we're on the eve of destruction, Barry McGuire sang in 65. We're all unique, and we're all replacement parts. There are more microorganisms in what we call our bodies than stars in the sky. So maybe each of us is some simple creature in the universe's gut, breaking down time and matter. Is that a new perspective? Cosmologists keep trying to find a cause. Today is a new day. Inhale like you never tasted air before. As Joni Mitchell sang in 69, I really don't know life at all. But I keep trying to find out. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You are listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Isabel Charlet, and Reed Johnson. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is the spirited Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Suzanne Potter, Frida Ross, Edwin J. Vieira, Jill Freitas, Alex Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 443-321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden will be joining us to talk about his latest article on the Supreme Court case Grants Pass v. Johnson. Stick around.
Cable News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to Cable News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Reed Johnson. We're here with Jeremiah Hayden, he's a reporter at Street Roots, talking about his latest article for the paper, Sweeping Decision, Grants Pass v. Johnson. Welcome to the show, Jeremiah.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us. So your new article is about the Oregon case that the Supreme Court heard late last month on the laws that cities and states can make regulating or even banning homelessness. Before we get too deep into things, can you give us a brief overview of the case, Grants Pass v. Johnson? What's it all about?
Yeah, this case started in 2018, just about 6 weeks after the Ninth Circuit Court put out its opinion in Martin v. Boise. And this sort of expanded that. The city of Grants Pass had passed a set of ordinances that essentially made it impossible for people to be in the city if they were homeless. This is a question of whether or not cities can level penalties against people who really have no other place to go.
Mm-hmm. And you were actually there at the Supreme Court on the day of oral arguments, which isn't something that everybody gets to do. What was that like?
Yeah, it was a very interesting experience. It's very theatrical, very scripted, especially kind of up front before the justices come in. I couldn't help but kind of notice the disparity between like the theater of that scenario and the way that people are actually living their lives, on the street. So kind of